Welcome to another Sport and Lifestyle Biz here on UK Health Radio, your real feel-good radio. This week we have two fantastic interviews. We have Katie Scott, the dual-purpose horse trainer, back with us again, this time giving us her expert views on the national hunt season that has just finished. And we have more from Sam Thomas, head coach at Principia College for girls football, telling us about his love and his dreams and his past in the game. Throw in our SLB Sports Roundup and we know you'll enjoy the show. You'll never stop this, but I will never let you go. Well, who am I to say? Maybe by now you should know. You got your somebody calling. You think you're somebody, don't you? I think you're scared of keeping somebody close. You'll never stop. We start this week with Katie Scott and her expert views on the national hunt season. Well, Katie, we're now moving on to our national hunt review, just taking in the big races during the season. We could be here for hours talking about every big race. So I've tried to narrow it down mainly over fences that might have important factors to big races later on in the season. We started off with the Ladbrokes Trophy, used to be called the Hennessy, the famous Hennessy, run at Newbury. Always for me a good trial. Gold Cup, maybe more national. This year it was won by the unbelievable Venetia Williams. Well, not her personally. It was won by Cloudy Glenn, trained by Venetia, ridden by Charlie Deutsch. Second was Vidal on the Roof, was a horse that I've probably followed over a cliff, but I think he's getting better now. How do you feel about them two, and what do you think the importance of the race is?
Yeah, it was great to see amazing training performance to come back off a summer break and win a race like that. Possibly a bit disappointing what he went on and done afterwards this season. You know, maybe he gave himself a hard race first time out.
Yeah.
The race maybe hasn't had a massive consequence in the end of the season, has it?
Not really.
But it was great on the day.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Fiddler on the Roof, I think, went on to, was he fifth or something in the National? Again, looked like he was travelling well, just didn't get the extra little bit of distance after the second last. Cloudy Glenn, you're correct, didn't do too much. He was actually ridden from the back in the Ladbrokes Trophy, where he used to lead. So whether that was just a one-off and it made him sort of overperform because it was something different, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's the sort of horse that likes being fresh off a break, you know.
I think you could be right, but it was still a very good performance. I actually felt sorry for Fiddler on the Roof because he broke the race apart and probably ran his best ever performance and didn't win, you know.
No.
But you're right, it wasn't so great for the rest of the season, but good for Venetia Williams to get one on the board. She's an unbelievable trainer.
Unbelievable, and Charlie Deutsch and her just have such a good partnership.
Yes.
You know, everything seems to, the horses jump well for him. He obviously goes in and rides them out at home. He knows them well, rides them well, and it just seems to work for her.
Yeah, and Charlie Deutsch for me is one of them better jockeys around, but he doesn't necessarily yearn to ride for outside yards. Yes, he rides a couple now for Sam Thomas and a couple of others, but he tends just to stick to Venetia's horses, and it doesn't matter if he goes to a meet and only has one ride.
I suppose that'll be because he is at Venetia's every day, so he probably doesn't get away to go and ride out for other trainers, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And he probably just wants to look after himself and ride nice horses, I would say, which I would be able to probably the same if I had a good job.
He's earning a lot of good money as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Absolutely.
And he'll know when he's getting on horses, they're well schooled and, you know, he's riding for somebody that he gets on well with and there'll be no hassle.
Brilliant. Very good point. Thank you for that. So now we're going to move on to the mid-season championship race in England, the King George Chase. A lot of horses win this that don't necessarily stay the Gold Cup trip, although plenty have proven that you can do both, speed and stamina. Again, it was another race that was probably blown apart by horses not performing. Potentially another freak result with Tornado Flyer winning, amazing Willie Mullins. Second was Kempton Stalwart almost, Clandy's Oboe, who actually did come back towards the end of the season and ran well. But one of the horses I would like to get your take on, as well as the two I've mentioned, is the horse that has an engine but always seems to fall, and that's Asterion Falange. Is there a big one in him, or do you just think he's always going to try and take one home with him and pay the price?
Yeah, it must be very, very, very frustrating for them. I don't know. When he doesn't fall, you know, he went and ran at Cheltenham and beat 22 lengths. You know, it's hard to say, isn't it? I mean, they really did probably the two girls are fantastic, amazing jockeys, Bryony and Rachel, but I don't think that was their finest day. I think they'll both look back on it and think, God, I made a bad job that day. Yeah. They cut each other's throat, set the race up for horses that were finishing, you know, and I think that Rachel was probably very sensible to pull her horse up and save it for another day. I think they just went absolutely stupid and set the horse race up for horses that weren't quite as good but had some petrol left in the tank.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It wasn't an enjoyable race to watch.
No.
I normally love the King George. I think it's fantastic, but it didn't do much for me this year.
And that's a very good point, and one that I'd actually forgotten. I don't really like to apportion blame, but for me, the blame initially lies with Rachel, because Bryony Frost went and done her normal thing on Froden, and Rachel probably thought, I'll use Manila Indo's stamina to try and put a spanner in the works. And what she did was end up, with Bryony then not taking a pull and going with her, they sort of ruined each other's race, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, like, if the horse is good enough, I tend to think the jockey will win on them. And I think they're both fantastic jockeys.
Yeah, I agree.
I just think they went out that day thinking, how are we going to beat Frodon? This is how.
Yeah.
And it just got silly.
I couldn't agree any more with you. That was my exact point. You know, I think Rachel is an unbelievable jockey. Not saying that Bryony isn't, but
she's amazing.
Rachel is unbelievable. But if she hadn't have taken Frodon on, that would never have happened. And I still think she probably would have finished in front of Frodon. I know Milan Ellinger hadn't had the greatest prep, but he came back towards the end of the season okay again, considering he probably had a real hard one in the King George, to be fair. I spoke to Danny after that, and he said he always thought he had a chance of winning, but he was surprised how easy he won. And he did say that Asterion Falange has got one of the best engines in the yard, but he just forgets his lines sometimes. But as you said, he's come out since in the Irish Gold Cup and the Cheltenham Gold Cup, and he's completed both times and faded at the end, so who knows what's going on with him.
Yeah. So is he fallen because he's no petrol left? Hard to wonder, isn't it?
Yeah, you do wonder that, because when you look at when he does stand up, he does fade at the end. Yeah, I agree with that, Katie. So we'll go on to some of the big festivals now, the ones that the viewers will know about. We'll start off with the Dublin Racing Fest held at Leopardstown in February, and some really good performances by Galopin de Champs, Sir Gerhard, Chacun Pour Soi, who's a great horse on his home turf in Ireland, Verborn, who I'm very interested in, and obviously Honeysuckle, who won another Irish champion hurdle, and one that I think is going to be a real superstar, Facil Vega. Any thoughts on those horses?
Yeah, for sure. Facil Vega, I mean, imagine having that looking over your stable door. It's just amazing. Just done everything so well, so impressive. And there was so much talk about American Mike coming up to the Cheltenham Festival. So they obviously think a lot of that in that yard. So I was really taken on with him. I think he's fantastic. Yeah. And I just can't wait to see where he goes next year.
Yeah. I agree, and just before you said it, I was thinking exactly the same thing. It's unlike Jamie Codd to come out and say, I'm going to win the bumper, and Facil Vega just blew him away.
Yeah, no, I mean, there was so much talk on American Mike. Obviously, Willie Mullins isn't a talking man. He lets his horses do the work.
Yeah.
He really just went out there and showed them all who he is and how he's bred.
Yeah. Yeah,
so I thought that was fantastic, and I'm really excited to see him out next year.
Yeah. Do you think he'll go for something like the Supreme, or do you think they'll step him up, or do you think he might go straight for the champion? I think he's got enough class.
I think that Willie Mullins will enter him in every race there is and decide the week before.
He'll pick the best one
for
him.
It's hard to say. I think sometimes it depends with Willie as well, what else he's got in the yard, and he tries to place them about the place. Yeah, so I don't think he'll really know at the moment. I think he'll pop him in everywhere and see what he thinks. Yeah. I suppose walk in the park. You know, he should stay, shouldn't he?
I think
The mother was obviously very, very special.
Yeah, absolutely. But Willie does tend to go the novice route, doesn't he? He tends not to sort of overphase them as a novice, you know?
I think that's right. I mean, he has got horses already for the champion hurdle next year. So why would you give your young horses a hard race?
Absolutely. I mean, I'd like to see Appreciate It with a full season behind him, although I do think he'll stay further.
Yeah.
I don't know if they'll take Honeysuckle on again, because they're probably going to have Constitution Hill to go against as well. That would be an interesting race, wouldn't it, you know?
He's not going to commit horses anywhere until a week before. They're all sound, fit, healthy, and he knows they can run, and then he'll start deciding which one goes where, I think.
Absolutely, totally agree with you. So now we move on to the Cheltenham Festival. There are a lot of these horses that I mentioned from Leopardstown that are repeated. I'll start off with one that was probably the most unlucky loser at Cheltenham, and that's Galopin de Champs.
Oh, yeah.
Who, at the time, people were saying, how can he do that to Bob Olinger? I remember winding the clock back 12 months, and Bob Olinger stepped up to 2.5 miles over hurdles and absolutely ran away with the Ballymore hurdle. And he but since that race, he's gone to Punchestown and pulled up again. So perhaps he's not quite right, but what Galopin de Champs done to him prior to falling at the last, if that was Bob Olinger, was just unbelievable.
Yeah, and I think when you look back and see it was then 40 lengths back to the second horse,
It
says even more about the horse's class. So he's very, very special. He's maybe just a bit too good a jumper sometimes, isn't he? Just
gets
a bit too long
and
low. Just sort of tripped himself up on the landing side. Yeah. I mean, Paul Townend must have been looking at the ground coming towards him thinking, oh my God. But yeah, he's obviously a very, very, very special horse.
Yeah.
And hopefully he comes out next year and gets a win at Cheltenham. He put it right at Fady House, didn't he?
He did, yeah. And you're right, Paul Towner was probably looking at the ground thinking, at least I've got another 8 favourites to go and try and make up for
this. And if this horse, hopefully the horse is fine and I'll get back on it next time, he's probably thinking.
Oh, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think he's a superstar.
It was absolutely fantastic to watch his round of jumping until that point. It was probably not a great race, to be fair, if you took the two out of them. It was a bit of a disappointing race. But
I agree. You can only do, I suppose, beat what's put in front of you. Other horses that we'd mentioned already that ran really well, Sir Gerhard, who's actually been beaten since a Punchestown, but sometimes a long season, perhaps.
I thought that was a bit disappointing, to be honest. I was a big Sir Gerhard fan, going into Cheltenham.
Same here.
He done it nicely, done everything nicely, and then just seemed to not quite produce it at Punchestown.
Just seemed to flatter to deceive, really, at the end of the race.
But like you say, it's a long season.
Yeah.
Big young horse. Perhaps he'll come back better next
year. Perhaps he will. The horse that you loved from Leopardstown, Facil Vega, as we've already spoken about, blew the bumper away, got a massive future in front of him. And for me, Vaborn, related to Vator, who I absolutely loved when he was racing, well, made the Triumph Hurdle look not like the Triumph Hurdle, made it look like a nursery, you know, selling racing.
Oh, yeah, no, that was a special performance. And obviously Constitution Hill as well, you know.
Yes.
There's going to be some good championship races next year.
I agree. A Plutar was sensational in the Gold Cup. Rachel admitted that she rode him quite right last year. But, you know, I think if he'd have been in that form, I think he'd have still won last year. I think he was just amazing this year. Florin Porter won a Danny's, doubled up in the Stayers Hurdle. He must be a nightmare to ride. He doesn't run straight all the time. Energamame took advantage of Shiskin's inability to handle the ground.
Yeah, he did. He came back. There was something not right, though, hasn't it?
Yeah, something not right, I agree. And then one of my favourite horses in training is Alaho. He's just a monster. He just...
Yeah, he's amazing.
He just goes from the gun and he just puts everything to the sword.
Yeah.
And then he's gone on and stayed 3 miles at Punchestown. Do you see him being, think of King George horse, do you think he could potentially go 3 miles two of the Gold Cup?
Yeah, possibly. I suppose you go the King George route and then if he looks like he's seen it out well, they'll head in that direction, won't they? I know he's disappointed since, but I thought Lompressi was really good at Cheltenham.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he jumped beautifully at Cheltenham.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there was a non-runner, Paul Nichols' horse, Brave Man's Game, but they've both been beaten by Ahoy Senor at Aintree.
Exactly, Ahoy Senor was maybe just a bit novice around Cheltenham.
Yeah.
I'd imagine hopefully next year he will win at the festival.
Yeah, he's a good horse, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was just a bit novice at some of the fences on a hilly track. I think back at Aintree he was just a bit more confident, wasn't he?
Yeah, I agree. So, I mean, they're the main stars. I just want to finish Cheltenham off, Katie, with your views on Tiger Roll, who ran his last race, and the fact that he was beaten by his stablemate in his last race.
Oh, yeah. It was one of those ones when you were watching it, it was a bit horrible to watch because I sat and I was watching it and he was going well and everyone wants him to win.
Yeah.
And then coming round the bend, you thought he's won. And then you looked down and you could just see them coming and thinking, oh... And it was just painful all the way to the line. But I think it was fantastic. The horse has finished his career, fit well and healthy.
Yeah.
And I think that it was a credit to Gordon Elliott, that horse. You know, to turn a horse out year after year.
Yeah.
Like that, have it in good form. You know, he's just been an amazing horse. And he's tiny.
It just says it all, doesn't it? You know?
When he came in with Delta Work looked like, he looked like a mare in foal.
Yeah.
He's just been an amazing training performance every year with that horse.
Yeah. You were right, from the last, you always knew Delta Work was going to get up.
Yeah, and I mean, Delta Work, the old brigade have got to move aside for the young ones to come through. You know, he's 12-year-old, he's done nothing wrong, he's earned his retirement.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he's been on the go a long time. You know, he was out running as a three-year-old. He's not like these national hunt horses that started at five or six.
No, he won the Triumph Hurdle as a four-year-old, so he's had a great career. Do you think they were right to retire him then, or would you like to have seen him try to win a third national?
I would have loved to have seen him win the national. Yeah. It would have been fantastic. But do I think they've done the right thing by the horse? Probably.
Yeah, I probably do.
I think they should have done it more professionally. I don't think going out in the press and moaning about the handicapper was good. But I think if they just said, look, the horse has done nothing wrong, he's 12 year old, it's a lot of weight, he's only little, we're going to retire him, that would have been sensible.
Sadly, though, that was an annual event, wasn't it, from Mr. O'Leary? The last
year
he won, he had too much weight. I think he won by 20 lengths then, or he would have done.
Yeah.
If he hadn't pulled himself up in front. There you go. Yeah, I thought it was a shame. I like to see horses run. I like to see champions run, just as much I don't like to see them get beat, if that makes sense. I'd love him to have gone and tried to win a third, but you're right, I don't pay the bills, so it's not my decision, and you have to respect that of those that pay the bills, sort of thing. So that led us on, nice link into the Grand National, the Aintree meeting. There were a few good performances. We've mentioned Ahoy Senor. There was other good performances at Aintree. Epatante, I liked her performance, stepped up to 2 miles four. We'll concentrate, obviously, on the big race, the Grand National. They always say there's a story or a fairy tale, don't they? There was a story. It was won by Noble Yates, trained by Emmett Mullins, who trains, I think, at the end of Willie Mullins's gallops or yard. And it was ridden by Sam Whaley Cohen on his last ever ride. And he had the best record of any jockey racing around the national fences.
Yeah, it's a super story. Whaley Cohen's have put a lot into racing over the past few years. Sam's a super amateur jockey, he's done amazing for his dad, and it was great. I think he was brave to say he was retiring before he went out. I don't think I'd like to put that pressure on myself.
No.
I'd have been going quietly. But he made his decision, he announced it, and it was a fairy tale really for them.
He does seem like a very calm lad though, do you know what I mean? Like, he seems to come across as the guy that could mention that.
Yeah, to be fair, I think I watched the TV programme and it was kind of about him a few years ago when he was riding the horse at Cheltenham that was a favourite. And he's they were filming at his work and at the gym, and he's obviously a very, very hard-working, talented young man.
Yeah.
And good on them, they're always going to be in racing. They bought the horse for him to win the National, and he's so lucky he's in the position to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
He still has to be fit enough and talented enough to do it.
Yeah. You're right, you've still got to go and do it. And he did have a good record over the national fences, you know. So, yeah, fair play to him. Second place is Any Second Now, who finished third, I believe, the year before, despite getting hampered badly out on the first circuit. He ran another cracker. You know, he actually was leading, coming towards the elbow, and just got run out of it.
Handicapper has just beat him, hasn't he?
I agree.
He's come up for finishing second. If he'd been running off the weight he'd run in 2021, he'd have won this.
I agree. And then third place was that form tied in with Tiger Roll at Cheltenham, was Delta Work, who ran an absolute cracker. I firmly believe whether not staying is the right thing or just not getting home against two horses that stayed well, I don't know. Another cracking race from Delta Work.
Yeah, brilliant. Obviously, he had a little bit more weight as well in the first two home.
Yeah.
But he was beat a fair way. I don't think there's any hard luck stories with him, is there?
No, absolutely not.
He ran his race and got beat.
Absolutely not. I had three big fancies that we put out for the radio. Coming to two out, they were first, second and third and jumped it in a line. It was Any Second Now, Delta Work and Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah.
Getting a little bit excited, and they finished second, third and fifth. So
that's fine if you had them each way.
Exactly, yeah. If you did, your bookmaker, as we say, always bet responsibly, and if your bookmaker offered that many places. So yeah, it was okay, which was good. That's our season review from my point and your great views on them. Was there any other races that you wanted to mention?
I think we've touched on the ones that I really enjoyed. Yeah, I've really enjoyed all those races.
Brilliant.
Winter. It was great watching Cheltenham. I really enjoyed that, and it was great seeing the crowds back.
So your horse to follow out of all of them would be Facil Vega?
Oh, definitely. I'd be really intrigued to see where he heads next year. I'd like to have seen some videos of him schooling, but I haven't.
I agree, and I do agree also that I think he'll go to the Supreme, perhaps.
I'd say that you'd go the Supreme route with him to start off with.
Oh, so Willie likes a stayer in the Supreme, you know, Vitor and all that. He likes a stayer. Plus, he's got Verborn to perhaps go for the Champion Hurdle, who showed countless abundance of speed in the Triumph. And you've got Constitution Hill for Nicky Henderson's to go in there as well. So it's going to be a hot race.
Yeah, no, it's brilliant.
It is. Well, any horses that you are looking forward to from your yard through the summer?
I Yeah, so we've got quite a few that are good form. We've actually got 3 2-year-olds in the yard, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
So we've got 2 of them are named. We've got a little filly called Killing Eve, and she has been working away nicely, and she will likely make a debut in sort of July. And then we've 2 others. We've got a little dandy man that will be a sprinter, and she'll probably be ready in June.
Lovely.
And just getting these 2-year-olds out is so exciting because it's so much work to get. And then, you know, you take them to the races and it's like taking your children to school for the first day, I suppose. So that's really exciting. They're working well, but, you know, we're a small yard, so we don't really know what we've got until we run them. And then we've got, obviously, got Gwydor, who's been fantastic for us, and hopefully he can keep improving. And then, yeah, just them all, really. We've not got anything in the yard that I don't think will hopefully win a race in the, over the summer.
Brilliant. And what are the numbers again, Katie? Sorry, what are the numbers in the yard?
I think we're riding out 16 at the moment.
Yeah. And how many boxes?
We've got 22 stables.
Yeah.
But there's always 2 or 3 on holiday and 2 or 3 injured.
Yeah.
So that's great. And we had our mare covered this week, so we've got her home, so hopefully we'll have a foal again in the spring as well. So.
Fabulous. That's amazing. Yeah. Wow, how amazing is that? That's absolutely brilliant. Okay, well, we'll let you get on with your day. I just want to say huge thank you as always, not only to talk about your own yard, because, you know, it is a personal thing, but we love to try and promote and help out if we can. But to give us your thoughts on that national hunt season last year, you're right, it was an amazing season. And every year, even if most of them are Willie Mullins and sometimes Gordon to back him up, the Cheltenham races never fail to disappoint with class and talent and ability.
Yeah, it's just fantastic to be part of a sport like that.
Yeah.
Every year you see all these horses coming through, so it's great.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Katie Scott, all the way from Scotland, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. That was absolutely fantastic. Not just your expert views on the season, but also an update and something to look forward to with your own yard. Now, after our first set of commercials, we've got Sam Thomas, all the way from Principia College.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Today I'm joined by somebody, he's a very good friend of mine, but he's slightly different from the normal female professional player we have on. He's a college coach, he's a recruiter in the USA and the world. And I'm delighted to say, this week we're joined by Sam Thomas, all the way from Principia College in Illinois. Hi Sam, how are you?
Hi John, I'm great. How are you doing today?
Really well, thank you. Really, really well. Lovely for you to join us and give us an insight on part of what we do. We obviously like to send girls to America to play football under education, but you're the people we need to impress. You are a coach. We'll get the listeners to know a little bit more about you, then go on to what you're doing at the moment. If you could just start off by telling us, you know, your love for football, how it started and when you got into the game.
Yeah, of course. First of all, thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be on. It's a pleasure to get a chat with friends. Yeah, so when I was young, I've got 3 brothers, and as soon as each of us could walk, our parents started throwing us in sport. And so go to golf and tennis and hockey and football and baseball and this, that, and the other. And so the 3 that stuck for me when I was little was baseball, basketball, and obviously football. And played those all growing up, all the way through high school. So through age 18, I played all 3. And then when I got to college, I had to drop 1. Most people drop 2 and just focus on 1 if you're doing most. But I went to a small school, which afforded me the chance to do multiple. And so for me, that was football and baseball. Now, the reason that I was able to do that was I was a goalkeeper. I was never anyone who was going to blow an opponent away with skills or speed, but I had a good frame and I had good hands. And so I made my trade in the goal. And yeah, after 2 years of baseball, I had an injury which ended my pitching career. And so I was able to focus solely on football. And that was honestly kind of when the passion fully took over. It was always a sport I played, always a sport I loved, but I didn't have the same connection to the sport that I did with baseball, because baseball is very much my main passion sport. And so I kind of arrived late to the real love of the game that I have now. And I think that gave me even more of an appreciation for it. It was one of the driving forces into becoming a coach. So it was a bit of a different journey than most might have, but it got me to where I am nonetheless.
Fab, and obviously you mentioned there was three sports. What was the awareness like for soccer, as it's called in America, compared to the other sports? Sure. Was it quite mainstream?
For youth sports, yes. So in youth sports, soccer is the most played sport in America.
Wow.
However, as you get to age 14 to 18, it is also the sport that has the greatest drop-off in rates of players who stop playing. So, you know, there wasn't the awareness when we were young of everyone watching the Premier League and watching the other European competitions, because it just wasn't televised at the time like it is now. And the TV rights for the Premier League here in the States are ridiculous. So that access is great for youth players now.
Yeah.
But when I was growing up, it was just the go-to sport that every parent put their kid in. And when it came to that truly competitive teenager age, that was when you saw the drop-off, because we didn't have the coaching to develop really elite levels of skill.
Right.
And so when it became truly competitive beyond the youth scope, then there was a big drop-off. But for kids, you know, parents love dropping kids off and getting 2 hours of their day back. And it's the perfect group activity, team activity, tire the kids out, send them home, and they'll take a nap for the parents. You know, it was one of those things culturally. But it's really grown, which obviously, as a lover of the sport, is the biggest thing for me that I love.
So, interestingly, you said that obviously the drop-off is the highest rate, and the initial reaction would be because it's not considered as a main sport in America. But you said it was obviously down to the coaching. Is that because as a person or as a young adult, if you want to do coaching, you're encouraged to go down the more natural sports, you know, baseball, basketball, NFL?
Maybe. I know that the drop-off rate for youth athletes nowadays is not what it was in the 90s. The coaching has improved significantly. The exposure to the game has just, you know, exploded. And so I think that started to change now. But in my experience growing up, there wasn't much culture around diverting athletes into coaching.
Right.
Coaching was something that former athletes kind of fell into, as I did. Nowadays, that's starting to shift where, you know, I'm starting to recruit athletes, and even through their playing years, when you ask them, you know, what do you want to be? And some want to be an accountant, some want to be a structural engineer.
Yeah.
Some are saying, I want to coach. I want to operate in that environment. And obviously, that's the kind of stuff that I really resonate and respond to. But there wasn't much of a culture of expectation of that being a pathway for many when we were younger, regardless of sport. It was just kind of, you play until you're done playing, and if you're good enough, then you get to go coach.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And obviously, that's something that, as you said, you latch onto and you're happy with, the fact that there is the opportunity, as you call it, the pathway to go into coaching at a younger age.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. And that's good. So you obviously grew up, you loved football. How did you get into football at that next level?
Yeah, so obviously, as a goalkeeper, you're in a little bit more high demand for a position with a little bit less competition.
Yeah.
If you're quality, right? And that was the situation I found myself in. So when I was playing in high school, I didn't really have to fight for minutes. And then the same thing happened in college. And as it became my year-round sole sport, then I saw my progress within it, obviously, you know, accelerate. But I think it was specific to being a goalkeeper and being a pretty well-rounded athlete made it simpler for me to continue ascending the ladder of playing Whereas, you know, with my athletic platform, if I were required to go to my feet or particularly fast, I would have struggled. And that's one of the reasons that I couldn't play basketball in college was I'm not a 6'7", you know, athlete who runs a 4.2 40.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not my platform. But I was good between the posts, and that made it for me.
Fabulous. Great to get some insight. So you graduated. What was your career like?
So I didn't play in any of the bigger leagues. I don't think it's still in place now. I think it's evolved. But the league I played in for 3 years, my last 2 years of college and my first year after college. It was called the PDL, Premier Development League, I believe is what it was called.
Okay.
And it was kind of like an in-between between the lower level pros in the United States and college. Obviously, college athletes can't get paid. Well, they can now in certain ways, but they couldn't back in my day. And that afforded the opportunity for some graduates to get paid to play over the summer as kind of a route into the professional game. So it was more exposure, more games, you know, usually higher level coaching, higher level competition. So I played in that league for 3 years over summers between college seasons and really enjoyed it. And then upon graduating, I did a couple tryouts, went here and there. And as I was going through that process, my assistant coach in college got a head coach position all the way out in Oregon and asked me if I wanted to come help him out for a season while I was still chasing this journey. And I needed the money. So I said yes. Headed out there. And that was what I just fell in love with. I stopped wanting to chase playing and wanted to dive headfirst into coaching. As soon as I got my teeth into it, it was all over.
Well, that's fab. We're going to come on to in a little bit about the full circle, as it were, which I think is an amazing story. So you fell into coaching, but you actually found it was for you. I'm quite similar. I mirrored what you were saying when I didn't have good feet. I couldn't go around people. Because I'm not a goalkeeper size either, I found my niche by tackling people and winning the ball and giving it to the people that could play. I found that was what I could do. So, yeah, I know what you're saying. But again, I fell into coaching. It's one of them things, isn't it? I think that if you're passionate about it, there's nothing more rewarding than seeing a young player develop into the best they can be.
Absolutely. Thing that I say all the time, my favorite part about coaching are the light bulb moments. When you see someone have that light bulb go off, you know that they have just discovered something that they're going to retain forever. And that's a rung in the ladder of their development. Every light bulb is another rung in the ladder.
Yeah.
And so that's my absolute favorite bit, is when you can actually tangibly track, oh, they just overcame that hurdle. Oh, they just took that next step. Now I know we get to move on to the next. We get to move on to the next. Those are my favorite parts.
And that's a very good point, because all coaches are different and there's plenty of coaches out there that are better than me. But I do find that some coaches try and rush everything at once, and there's nothing wrong with showing different things, but you've got to do it at their own speed. And you're right. You described it perfectly. That light bulb moment when you think they've got it.
Yeah. It's taking a skill and making it habit. Yeah. Right. And that's when I was a younger coach, and I still am a relatively young coach by most metrics, but when I was first getting started in coaching, I didn't have the perspective to know that you can't coach an athlete on everything all at once, because that was my learning style. I wanted to be told everything I was doing wrong, everything I could be doing better. That was how I wanted to receive my information. I didn't realize that most don't work that way. And so as you're helping athletes develop, that can be a very overwhelming thing. And particularly, and if we're getting into the weeds about the level that I coach in college, particularly for college-age athletes, there are so many things on their mind when they're in school and they've got, you know, 3 to 6 hours of class every day. They've got social responsibilities.
Yeah.
They're away from home, away from family for maybe the first time for most. And then they have to, on top of that, worry about their football. If you give them too much, you know, you're going to fry the brain. It won't be able to keep up. And so making sure that you understand your athletes, understand their learning style, how they best receive that information, then once you have that relationship and that understanding, you can coach to their learning ability. That little dance in there to figure that out, and the relationship building part of that process is probably the other favorite part about coaching that I really fell in love to working with the college athletes.
Yeah.
Because you really get a sense of a person at that time. You get a relationship.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that carries on beyond the field. That's, you know, when your former players are having kids and you get to go to the baby shower, they're getting married and you're getting invited to the wedding. Those are the fun parts about coaching that you hang on to after they step off the field.
Thank you, Sam. That was an excellent part one. So informative and really helpful and interesting for everybody listening. Look forward to part two coming soon. And after our final set of commercials, it's our SLB Sports Roundup.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
The station that makes you feel good.
We finish off this week's show with our SLB Sports Roundup featuring golf, horse racing, cricket, tennis, NBA and motorsport. We start with golf, and on the PGA Tour it was the Memorial Tournament at Muirfield Village Golf Course in Dublin, Ohio. It was won by Billy Horschel, a brilliant four rounds, winning with minus 13, four shots clear of Aaron Wise, two shots clear of tied for third, Joachim Niemann and Patrick Cantlay on 7 under par. This week they go to Toronto, playing the St George's Golf Course for the Canadian Open. On the European Tour, it was the European Open at the Green Eagle Golf Course, Porsche Nerd Course in Germany. It was won by Kali Samuja on 6 under par with an amazing 8 under for the final round, coming right the way through the field. He beat Will Besseling by 2 shots on minus 4, tied 3rd place Victor Perez, the overnight leader, and Richard Mansell on minus 3. This week it's the Scandinavian Mixed Tournament from Halmstad Golf Course in Sweden. On the LPGA, it was the next major of the season for the women, the US Open from the Pine Needles Lodge and Golf Club in North Carolina. It was won by Minji Lee, a dominating performance on minus 13. Mina Harrigay was 4 shots back on minus 9, with Heejin Choi in 3rd on minus 6. And class came to the top with Jinyoung Koh in 4th, Lydia Koh in 5th. So Minji Lee, what a great performance. On to horse racing. 3 classics at the weekend. The Derby was won, as we suggested, by Desert Crown for Michael Stout and Richard Kingscote. It was an easy win in a very good field. He dominated and blasted clear 2 furlongs out. He's a horse to follow. The Oaks was the day before, and it was won by Tuesday for Aidan O'Brien, getting his record 10th Oaks and 41st Classic. Ridden by Ryan Moore, he beat Emily Upjohn, who stumbled coming out the stalls and left Frankie Dettori no option but to sit in and then come wide to challenge, and she lost out on the bob of the head. I think Emily Upjohn would win a rematch, but don't take anything away from the brilliant Tuesday. We suggested it would be between these two, and we're happy with the result. The French Derby didn't go our way. We thought Modern Games would win, but the combination of a high draw and softish ground didn't suit him, and it was won easily by Verdini, trained by Jean-Claude Rouget, and ridden by the brilliant Belgian Christophe Soumillon. Races to look forward to. It's the Belmont Stakes this week, and Rich Strike has recovered from any issues, and he's back in the fold. He won the Kentucky Derby, coming late and fast to beat Epicenter. I think he'll stay the extra 4 furlongs, and he's one to look out for at a nice each-way price. And Royal Ascot starts next week. Look out for Baid, Kuribus, Baybridge, Silk Sea Road, Trushan, Perfect Power, Homeless Songs and Hurricane Lane. All favourites and all we expect to take their races. Ground dependent being Trushan. Cricket and the first test of the England versus New Zealand series was held at Lord's, the home of cricket, and it was the first match for Brendan McCullum as England coach and the first match for Ben Stokes as England captain. Ben stood up, played a brilliant second innings, but the man who got England home was former captain, England's best player, Joe Root. He scored 100 and also made 10,000 runs at the same time with the same shot to equal Alistair Cook with 10,000 runs, and he was only the 14th player ever in the history of the game to do that. Joe Root's got plenty of time left, and he could chase down Sachin Tendulkar, who got 15,921 runs. It was a tale of two innings. First innings versus first innings and second innings versus second innings. England lost the toss. New Zealand chose to bat and was skittled out for 1-3-2. But England could only reply with nine more on 141. New Zealand went in again and battled to 285. But England got 279 for five with that brilliant performance from Joe Root added to two great accompanying innings from Ben Stokes and Ben Foulkes. It was great to see Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad back, and also a great debut for Matthew Potts. The second test starts this week at Trent Bridge. On to tennis, and it was the second major of the season with the French Open from Roland Garros in Paris. The women's tournament was unsurprisingly won by world number one and 35 in a row for Iga Swiatek. She beat young up-and-coming 19-year-old Corey Goff 2-0 in the final, 6-1, 6-3. And the men's was won by Rafa Nadal. 3-0 over Casper Ruud, who showed up very well, the young Norwegian. He won 6-3, 6-3, 6-0. Rafa still having a really bad foot injury, but managing to battle through the pain, got his 22nd Open Championship. And he's now two in front of Novak Djokovic and Roger Federer. On to NBA, and it's the championship finals. The best of seven. We've had the first two, both at Golden State Warriors' home ground in San Francisco. Boston upstaged the Warriors in the first one, winning 120-108 to snatch home court advantage. They were trailing up until the final quarter, which they won 40-16. Golden State Warriors have just hit back, winning game two, 107-88. Steph Curry top scoring with 29, and it was back to the Warriors' total defense, strangling the Celtics and unallowing them to score. We've now, in the next week, got two games at Boston and a fifth game at Golden State. Can Boston win their two home games and keep the home court advantage? Or can Golden State nick one of the next two, then win their home game to snatch it back? On to motorsport. We start on two wheels with MotoGP, and it was the Gran Premio de Catalunya from the circuit to Barcelona, Catalunya. It was won by Fabio Quartararo on his Monster Energy Yamaha. Second place was Jorge Martin on the Ducati for Pramac Racing. And third place, Johann Zarco, his teammate, also for Pramac Racing. The championship standings see Fabio out in front trying to retain his title. He's on 147. Second, Alexis Spargaro for Aprilia, 22 behind on 125. And third, Enea Bastianini for Ducati Gresini Racing on 94. Next, they have the Grand Prix of Germany from the Saxon Ring. World Superbikes are back this week with the Emilia-Romagna round from Monza. The standings are led by Alvaro Bautista on the Works Ducati on 161 points. 17 points clear of Jonathan Rea on the Works Kawasaki, 144. Third place, Toprak Retsakioglu on 109 for the Works Yamaha team. British Superbikes are not back until the 17th of June when they take round four on the Knockhill Full Circuit. The standings are led by Bradley Ray on the OMG Racing Yamaha on 158. Second place, Jason O'Halloran for McCam's Yamaha 130. 5 points back to Lee Jackson on the FS3 Kawasaki on 125. Speedway Grand Prix had round four from Tetterau in Germany with the German Grand Prix. It was won by Patrick Dudek coming back to form and the one who actually handled the rutty track the best. Second place was Bartosz Marslik, who once he got clear in second with none of his closest rivals in the final, actually just made sure he completed to get some good points. And third place was fast Freddy Lundgren. This leaves the standings as follows, with Bartosz Marslik in front on 62 points, now 11 points clear of Magic Ninoski, and a further one back to Leon Madsen in third. They're back on the 19th of June with round five in Gorzów in Poland. On to four wheels NASCAR and the Cup Series race at WWTR at Gateway Motorsports Park. It was won by Joey Logano in a Ford Mustang for Team Penske. He got 44 points. Second place, Kyle Busch, driving the Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing. He got 46 points. Third place, his brother Kurt Busch, also a Toyota Camry for 23XI Racing. He got 44 points. This leaves the standings with Chase Elliott still out in front, driving the Chevy Camaro for Hendrix Motorsports on 507. But he's being closed down all the time by Kyle Busch. As we mentioned, driving the Toyota Camry for Joe Gibbs Racing, he's now just 9 behind on 498. Only a further 8 back to Ross Chastain, also the Chevy Camaro for Hendrix Motorsport. He's on 490. This week it's the Toyota Save Mark 350 from Sonoma Raceway. IndyCar following last weekend's Indianapolis 500. They moved across to Detroit for the Chevrolet Detroit Grand Prix at Belle Isle. It's the last ever race at this amazing track, and it was won by a veteran, Will Power for Team Penske, on 53 points. Alexander Rossi was second for Andretti Autosport, done nothing all season, but drove a brilliant fifth place in Indianapolis 500 and backed it up with a second place at Belle Isle, only just lost. Third place, Scott Dixon for Chip Ganassi. The standings now see Will Power out in front. They're ever-changing. He drives for Team Penske, 255 points. 3 points clear of Marcus Ericsson for Chip Ganassi Racing. And only 9 further back is Pato O'Ward for Arrows McLaren. This week, they're racing again with the Songio Grand Prix at Road America in Wisconsin. Formula E saw the Jakarta E-Prix from the International Street Circuit in Indonesia. It was Mitch Evans who won for Jaguar TCS Racing. He gained 26 points. Second place, Jean-Eric Verne for the DS Jatita team. He got 21. And third place, Eduardo Mortara for Rokit Venturi Racing. He got 15 points. This leaves the standings. Stoffel van Dorn is out in front for Mercedes EQ on 121. Second place, Jean-Eric Verne for the DS Jatita team on 116. Third place, Eduardo Mortara for Rokit Venturi Racing on 114. We finish off with Formula One, and this week they're back for the Azerbaijan Grand Prix in Baku. Max Verstappen leads the standings for Red Bull on 125 points. Second place, Charles Leclerc for Ferrari, 9 back on 116. Closely followed on 110 by Sergio Perez, also of Red Bull. The constructors see Red Bull out in front on 235. 36 points in front of Ferrari on 199 and 65 back to Mercedes on 134. That's our SLB Sports Roundup. Well, everyone, I just want to say thank you for tuning in to another great sport and lifestyle biz. We hoped you loved our interviews with Katie Scott all about the National Hunt Review. And we look forward to seeing you tune back in next week for some more great content. We've got some great interviews coming up with the likes of Holly Doyle, the best female jockey on the planet, with Anna Hopkin, Team GB superstar. Again, just focusing on those three international championships she's got coming up in the coming months. And plenty more from America, from Europe and from the UK. I'd like to say a big thank you to Johan, Rafaela and the team at UK Health Radio for giving us this great platform, and we'll continue to strive to bring you some great content. See you next week.